Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour on this frigid Thursday. Well, not Thursday. It's not Thanksgiving yet. This frigid Saturday afternoon. Tom Hsu running the board.
And running my way over here.
Tears in my eyes today. I was walking down the street here and wind, and I think there's some snow pellets. There's still snowflakes, snow pellets, wind. I was in tears.
Actually, leaving this place last night was just terrible because going down, all the wind's coming down to the river.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, my fingers were just freezing, just coming apart. I'm not sure if I'm ready for this yet, Tom.
You know you're in Minnesota if all we talk about is weather. And I think that if we took the amount of minutes we talk about weather on the show, that'd be most of the last year. Which, by the way, today is like our year anniversary. This is 1 year we've done the show Saturdays.
You're right.
We're much more awake now than we did it a year ago because I think we did it at about, 5 a.m. The first time we did it. Oh, okay, it was 8 o'clock. But
it's really the same thing.
Really the same
on
thing.
On a Saturday?
Yeah. Someone said to me yesterday, someone who listens online who doesn't actually listen in real time said, wasn't your show on really early? I said, yeah, we were on very early, and now we're on late in the day.
I am so happy. So happy we changed.
I still have this reoccurring dream, though, every Friday night that I had this dream, and I had it last night, that the show went on, but I was still sleeping, that I overslept the alarm, and I wake up about a half hour after the show starts, and there's no show.
Well, for me this morning, I had a power out maybe about 4 days ago. I reset the clocks, but I found out today that the one clock in my living room, much slower than the rest.
That
so
will happen.
I thought it was about 38 after. Turns out it was about 15. 38 before, 15, yeah.
It's great to have you here. We're a year into this. And a year ago, we talked about, it was the 30th anniversary of the Thanksgiving Day fire in downtown Minneapolis that happened on November 25th, 1982. And I want to play a clip that aired on the TV news that night. This is on Channel 5. And I want to play about a minute of that here. This will be 31 years this week on November 25th.
Now, Cindy Brucato, Dennis Bounds, and meteorologist Dennis Felkin. This is Eyewitness News at 5.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're looking at a live picture of the site of the worst fire in Minneapolis history. It was just about this time, 24 hours ago, that flames from the old Donaldson's building on Nicollet Mall spread to the Northwestern National Bank headquarters, and then cost some $30 million in damage. Well, Stan Turner is standing by live at the scene of that fire. We will give the latest to you in just a moment. Dennis?
Also in the next half hour, Tony Vigneri will report on a plan to build a $50 million horse race track right here in the Twin Cities.
Again in downtown Minneapolis for the latest on what's the biggest fire in Minneapolis history. Stan?
Cindy, there's so much noise down here. Wrecking crews have just gotten to work. I can only presume you asked me what's happening. It looks a lot like it did last night. The fire, of course, is under control. Firefighters, many of them remain at the scene right here, cleanup operations, trying to make sure that the fire does not rekindle. And a wrecking ball has just gone to work here on the 6th Street side, starting to knock down what is left of the north side of the old Donaldson's department store. Of course, more than 100 firefighters were here last night and through much of the night to contain the blaze to the one block area, which is bounded by Nicollet Mall to the west, 6th Street to the north, Marquette to the east, and 7th to the south. At least 9 firefighters were treated for minor injuries. One firefighter is hospitalized with chest pains, but amazingly, the injuries did not get any worse. Now, this is being called the most...
And to give equal time to all stations, let's play Channel 4's coverage of this fire.
Since the early 1920s, it had looked much the same, an imposing building that served as one of the main attractions on Nicollet Mall. But early last evening, flames were spotted inside the old Donaldson's building, flames that quickly spread to the Northwestern National Bank. And tonight, there is a very different scene on Nicollet Mall. Two buildings continue to smolder after one of the worst fires in Minneapolis history. That story dominates tonight's 6 p.m. report.
You know, everyone who worked downtown remembers this event. Very few were actually working downtown because it was Thanksgiving. Everyone's home. So the firefighters had to get called from Thanksgiving dinner to come down and battle the biggest blaze in downtown Minneapolis history.
And thank goodness for the bank that was taken. They had three different methods or three different protocols of protecting everybody's accounts. Can you imagine if those methods that they had not worked?
Well, and if you recall, this was the Northwest Bank building, which later became Northwest Banks and then Wells Fargo, and that building was eventually demoed, and it's now Wells Fargo Center with the biggest, one of the tallest towers in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I think it was Charles Lindbergh's The Jenny was actually in the actual building, and that was saved. But the weather ball, the Northwest weather ball, that was a icon of downtown Minneapolis, was taken down. I think it ended up at the State Fairgrounds.
Yep, it's over at the State Fairgrounds right now. We found the jingle, and we talked about it this week. Kind of a big event.
No, it was the fairgrounds because it was demolished a few years back. Mm-hmm. That's where it was stored, and it's no longer in existence.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
I thought it was still there.
It was still there until about 13 years ago, and then someone got tired of looking at it and tossed it out because that's what we do with history in this town. But to our younger audience, and I know we have a very large young audience on the show on Flashback Twin Cities, Donaldson's was a retail store much like Dayton's. Well, if you recall, Dayton's was. Powers, if you recall, Powers was. And this commercial I want to play. So Donaldson's was Dayton's rival, and they had a big, grand downtown store. They did a renovation of their downtown building, which looked very – and if you see the pictures online, it was originally a glass building, much like some of the nicer downtown department stores like the Dayton store was. But they did a, I don't know what you call it, a postmodern kind of look to it. So it was very concrete. And I think when it burned down, it was unfortunate that the building came down. But the architecture that came down, the actual building itself, was not a landmark. But this commercial I want to play is a commercial Donaldson's aired every single year for their big Saturday night sale. They aired it long after its relevance. I'm going to play this here.
Live from Donaldson's, it's Saturday night! With 15% savings on every regular and sale-priced item. A sale so extraordinary, we've made it after hours. 15% savings on men's fashions, women's fashions, linens, housewares, everything in the store. It's live Saturday night from 5 to 11 p.m. at all Donaldson's!
And to clear up the humor for our younger audience, he's doing a Chevy Chase pratfall, and this commercial aired long after Chevy Chase's relevance on SNL. So again, it worked for the
well. When you have a good quality commercial, keep on going. Saves you money,
it
right
saves
there.
Saves budget. Yeah, unfortunately, didn't save the company because the company got bought in the late '80s, and well, no one knows what Donaldson's is.
But it's a part of our history.
It's part of our history. We have a great guest today. We have Mike Fairborn, who was the chief meteorologist and meteorologist at WCCO TV for a few years. I'm not going to say the number yet, but let's go to break, and we'll come back with Mike Fairborn on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLVB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond. And we were listening to some audio from the Thanksgiving Day fire. And I want to note, if you want to watch those videos in full, you can go to tcmedianow.com. You can watch both Channel 5 and Channel 4's coverage of that night. When Lost Twin Cities, Tom, you know Lost Twin Cities. It's a show that airs on PBS occasionally.
I do. I'm aware of it. I don't watch it all the time.
It's on once every few years. But they came to me because they could not find video of the fire. That no one had video.
How is that possible? It was one of the most. It was the greatest fire in Minnesota.
It was taking up closet space.
Ah.
Someone had to toss the video out. But I got this video from a guy named Kurt Lundgren a while back and posted it online. It's a couple thousand hits later. It's a popular video. So if you want to watch the full video, go to tcmedianow.com. Also follow us on Twitter at tcmedianow on your Twitter account. Welcome my guest today, Mike Fairborn from WCCO TV, and presently, happily not in TV right now.
Thank you. No, I was kind of wishing that we hadn't scheduled this for today. I'd much rather be sitting in the Gopher Stadium right now waiting for the kickoff.
There's too much. I feel like if I watch it, I'm adding bad luck to it because I'm the kind of person, I watch those games, they turn it on at the third or fourth quarter when they're up 10, and then they lose right when I start watching.
I just love to be sitting here in 16-degree weather with the wind blowing in my face.
We wanted outdoor football. We got it, right?
Yes, we did.
Well, it's, hey, wait till the next – someday there's going to be a Twins playoff – someday we'll have a Twins playoff game, and it's going to be 20 degrees at a Twins playoff game.
You're right.
Or a World Series.
You're right.
But we – you know, when you came here in 1977, we had outdoor football – for the Vikings and the Gophers.
That's right.
And we managed somehow.
And when they tore down the old stadium out there by the Mall of America, and everybody was so sad, they were going out there and picking up pieces of the stadium to have as souvenirs. I wonder if they still have those on their shelves anyplace.
You know, what I'm wondering is the Metrodome, when the Metrodome comes down, are we going to have the same tiers that we did for Met Stadium? And the difference is, and I've talked to some people in the know, that, you know, Met Stadium was not a very well-maintained stadium.
No.
The Metrodome is... for as bad as it is, it's a stadium. It's built. You're not going to be able to just take seats off. You know, with thinking we're strong guys here, taking off a
we can try,
we can try,
but, and they will.
But you watch the Met Stadium tear down, or the last game at Stadium the Vikings played in '81. They're just tearing apart the stadium. They're taking down scoreboards and seats, and they're not really using a lot of effort because keep in mind these are guys who have been to a football game, and you know they think they're all powerful because they might have had a few refreshments during the loss they had.
Some Dr. Pepper,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Maybe a Diet Coke. And they're trying to pull this stuff out. You actually can watch that video online, too. But I'm wondering if the Dome's going to have the same tiers shed for
you know,
it.
There was a lot of sentiment to the old stadium down south. And from day one, everybody hated the Metrodome, I think.
Well, and we've been talking about stadiums on this show for... 6 months now? And we've played video from the stadium controversy. There's never not been stadium controversy in Minneapolis. But it seems like once it got pushed, we built it a year later, and we really don't want it anymore.
I know. And that's the same way it'll be with the Viking stadium if that ever gets...
It'll happen.
Yeah,
we'll be like, it's cold out
really?
Here.
Yeah, I know.
Why don't we have a top?
That's right.
$1 billion, we're going to get tired of it. You came here in 1977 as the first... meteorologist at Channel 4.
That's correct.
And you were talking a little bit before the show. You grew up in Tennessee, born in Utah, grew up in Tennessee, went to Idaho Falls,
mm-hmm.
Portland, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and then came to the big city of Minneapolis.
The big Minneapolis, yes. You know, it was interesting. When I was, I guess, recruited by a headhunter, what was happening in the Twin Cities at the time is that Walt Lyons.
That's right.
Was on Channel 5, and I think he had just, right shortly after I came here, got an offer to go to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and so they brought in, and I don't know whether Dennis Felkin was here then as kind of an understudy or if they hired him after Walt left, but, you know, the pressure was starting to build in television markets to hire meteorologists,
scientists
to do the weather.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you remember Dr. Michael Breen, you
mm-hmm.
know, he was a doctor, and so television stations were hiring lawyers and hiring doctors to kind of bring, can you call it, credibility to their newscasts.
And Walt Lyons wasn't just a meteorologist. He had a PhD from the University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So Channel 5, that was their selling point. We have a real – so when you – predict your forecast right or wrong, it's going to be a PhD predicting it. And at the time, TV weather is done by announcers and by personalities. And it was done, if you know, our friend Bud Kraling, he came from the commercial world. He came from pitching bread and pitching the products. And then
and radio before that.
Mm-hmm. And he got into weather pretty much because the sponsors wanted him to do it. And then the sponsorship and the weather kind of separated, and he still did weather for 50 years. But
that's right.
Great story. But you came in to offer credibility to the evening forecast and also to counter what Channel 5 was doing.
Yeah, and, you know, at that time, too, there was a big, big change in what we were able to do with technology,
mm-hmm.
With radar and with computer modeling and all of the things that were pushing meteorology out of the out of the voodoo age into the mm-hmm. into the technology age. And so I think television stations were starting to recognize that, and that's really where I came from Portland, Oregon. I was a meteorologist there, and when I got into television, I think there were probably a handful at most of quote meteorologists.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Frank Field had a degree in psychology,
mm-hmm.
and yet they called him Dr. Field doing the weather
sure.
in New York City, you know.
I love
and
it.
And so those things were out there, and you're kind of starting to see a little bit of a blend, maybe even a reversal from just the technology. I mean, we were color weather radar, you know, every name that we could come up with to think of some technical term for how we were analyzing and then forecasting the weather.
And did you go into your career either liking weather or TV? Which came first?
Neither.
Okay.
You want to hear that story?
I do want to hear the story.
Well, when I was a senior in college, getting ready to graduate, I always imagined that I was going to go to work for the National Weather Service. And that year, they had frozen hiring and were letting 10% of the government workforce attrition out. My lab partner at the University of Utah in Salt Lake was Mark Eubank. Have you ever heard that name? Anybody from the Intermountain West would know Mark Eubank. Mark was a junior, but he was doing the weather on KUTV in Salt Lake City. And he said, hey, you know, there are more and more television stations starting to hire meteorologists. He says, why don't you look into that? So I did, and sent out actually, you talk about people doing the weather, you know, salesmen, whatever. Mm-hmm. Up in Idaho Falls, Idaho, which was the city that I came from to go to the school at the University of Utah, had the salesmen doing the weather. And they were horrible. You know, they really were. And so that was my selling point. I wrote a letter to the television management there and said, you know, I can do a better job than these guys. And so he had me come up. I drove up at my own expense from Salt Lake to Idaho Falls to do an audition.
And had you ever done performing before? You ever done theater, public speaking?
No, okay. I hated it. I was an introvert, and I still am, you know, to a big degree. I was never one that enjoyed the limelight.
Okay.
And I think that that's I could kind of hide behind my meteorology degree, you know, to do that because people were going to tune in to me to find out what was happening in the weather, not to see how much I could entertain them. Well, everybody knows that that doesn't work forever in television.
Well, especially in weather. Weather became a part of TV, I think, especially in the 80s, that the meteorologists not only just do meteorology, they have to offer some kind of comedy or some kind of, you know,
they had to have a shtick.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if you look back at where we came from into television, you know, we started out with vaudeville. You know, vaudeville was the thing that communicated around the country as vaudeville troupes would go from city to city and take information with them along with comedy. Mm-hmm. And so when radio came out, everybody thought that radio was going to die, but all the vaudeville performers went into radio.
Right.
And then when television came out, some of those vaudeville actors were still around. And so, you know, they came into television with puppets on their shoulders and people that could ride upside down and backwards on two-way mirrors and, you know, all kinds of crazy shticks just to get people to watch.
So TV became a way for you to take your degree, take your skills, and still market it to make some kind of living with it.
With some degree of sanity.
And you're in Portland, and someone must like what you're doing, because I'm guessing that a consulting company that CCO probably had worked with, and our guest today, Mike Fairborn, talking about his journey to Minneapolis, a consulting company must have saw a tape somewhere or got a tape on someone's desk and thought, this guy might fit in with Dave Moore. Let's get him in here.
You know what? I really grew up, started out in television at a time when I could put together my own tape and send it out to television stations and news directors would watch. And that's how I went from Idaho Falls to Portland. I sent out about 11 tapes. I got 10 offers. One of them was from Portland, Oregon. And it wasn't because of any fantastic shtick that I did or my comedy routine. It was because I was a meteorologist.
Skilled at providing the weather, and you're conveying some sense of credibility because you do know what you're talking about.
Well,
I mean, that's at least gives the impression you do.
All right, that's debatable.
Yeah.
So I took the job in Portland, Oregon, and yes, then everything kind of changed. Right now, there are consultants that are out there that go around to every market in the country and videotape everybody on TV, and they put together a library. So when a news director now wants a meteorologist or a sportscaster or an anchor or something like that, they go to their library and pull out 7 or 8 tapes and send them to the news director. He looks at them, says, yeah, this will work for me, this will work for me, and they bring people in for interviews or whatever. And it's good for them and it's good for the television station so they can kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm. You know how that works?
Mm-hmm.
They take the leading anchor, newscaster, weatherman, mm-hmm. whatever, in one market that's killing their yep. station that they're consulting for and get him a job in another market and then bring somebody else in. So
that's the Dennis Felkin story. He was apparently doing better than a Hubbard owned station in Florida. So they mm-hmm. said, okay, we'll just bring you from Florida and bring you here. So we'll take care of that situation.
That's right. And that's what they do today. And you can't blame them, I guess. It's all money.
So you get this job offer to go to Minneapolis. Now, had you been to Minneapolis? Did you go in and do an audition, or what? How did this come about?
They flew me out here for an audition.
What month?
It must have been in August.
Okay.
Like that.
So
it was still. I think it was just right after. Maybe it was during the state fair that they picked me up and brought me in. And they were mm-hmm. talking about everything that was going on at the state fair. So it must have been the end of August, 1st of September, and things happened pretty quickly.
It's green and sunny. You
yes,
think this is a green
place. That's why you didn't run screaming. It's all coming together now.
Right. Yeah. And so when I had never really heard of WCCO. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't realize mm-hmm. at the time what WCCO represented, not only in this area but nationally as mm-hmm. as a news monster.
And you were going into a group of people that had been knit together for, and I'm not going to make you uncomfortable, but for many, many years, and viewers were very attached to the group that was there. Our guest today, Mike Fairborn, talking about the first days at CCO. Bud Kraling, Dave Moore, I mean, this was a marriage that you're entering now. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the viewers did respond to you, and you were able to be around for a couple of decades.
I think you can be two kinds of people. You can be the one that moves in and takes over and says, I'm the one now. Or you
right.
can be the one that says, you know what, these people have been here a long time. I love and respect them, and I'm going to work with them and do whatever I can do to, mm-hmm. to fit in and be part of the club.
But there's some added pressure. I mean, not only did the pressure going to a new city, away from friends and family, you're in a new job, which is fine, but now you have this underlining politics and this kind of and politics means a bad word, but you're changing the cast of characters right now.
But I never felt that at mm-hmm. WCCO, and I didn't want to give the impression that I was displacing mm-hmm. anybody.
Right.
Bud and I had a great working relationship, mm-hmm. and anything I could do to help Bud, I did. And I'm sure that he felt threatened. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all get to that stage in our career where mm-hmm. All of a sudden they're saying, well, you know, maybe we'll have you do the 5 and 6 o'clock show rather than the 10 and say, okay, the time's beginning, you mm-hmm. know, and you don't expect to stay at the top mm-hmm. to the end, mm-hmm. usually. Don Shelby being the exception.
Well, there's an exception to every rule. But,
that's true.
But you were there, and the great thing I always found about your forecasts were, and we talked about this before, you didn't hype storms, you didn't hype technology, you didn't. When we watch you, and when we're talking right now, I'm feeling very comfortable. With a very very calm conversation here, and that's what people like about Channel 4 and the weather there. It was not flashing lights and beeping. And
did they ever try to push you to
not that there wasn't any pressure
to do century. Hundreds will die.
I mean, did you ever get taken to the room? It's like, Mike, we need some more excitement when there's a tornado coming.
I don't think anything was actually said explicitly like mm-hmm. that, but the implication was always there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they would do promotions, we can track the weather right down to your side of the street in the neighborhood. Well, come on, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of that because we really can't do that. I mm-hmm. mean, you're accurate to within a half a kilometer with a good radar that's at the ideal range and all of that stuff. But to be able to say that and to mean it and to have people believe it, it just didn't work.
Play some audio here. This is a early promo you did at CCO your first couple of years there, and I want to play this.
A tornado, the most violent wind that sweeps the planet's surface. I'm Mike Fairborn, and here at WCCO Television, we're preparing for the tornado season, and there are some things that you should know ahead of time. A tornado watch is issued when conditions are favorable for storms that could produce tornadoes. It can last for several hours, so monitor your TV or radio continuously. A warning is issued only if a tornado has been sighted or detected by radar, and it means take cover immediately. In a weather emergency, get the total weather picture from Channel 4.
let's keep going. We'll play this whole intro here.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
From WCCO Television, the Northwest's leading news station, this is the 10 p.m. report.
Good evening. Tonight, thousands thrilled.
Getting that weather forecast prepared with black marker and pencil. I like it.
You know what? Actually, I think that's interesting that on your this was your demo tape? Is that right?
No, this was an actual intro into one of our newscasts. This is back in the days of More, More, and More.
That's right.
Because my broadcasting instructor, he said, the one thing you need to know beyond anything else is the difference between a weather watch
and a weather warning.
Because you will get phone calls and letters about that just all the time throughout your entire career. I'm just glad you knew it because I don't remember.
Well, you know,
and
that was always, you know, part of the educational process. We felt an obligation to inform people, but be able to explain to them what's going on and why it's going on mm-hmm. and what they need to do when.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting that you talked about, you know, kind of a calmness. I've had people say to me, you know, the thing that I appreciated mm-hmm. most about your broadcasts were that when you would come on, you weren't excited, you weren't mm-hmm. hyper, you mm-hmm. were just explaining to it what was going on and what you needed to do, and they respected that. Mm-hmm. So,
and do you recall, so you're in Minneapolis in 1977, do you recall what that first storm was, the first storm where you're like, okay, now I'm in Minneapolis now, and now this is what...
You know, I don't remember, you know, the first time that we started getting warnings, for example, but I do remember this, and I think Bud talked about that. He used to be up on the fifth floor in an announce booth. Mm-hmm. Our studio was on the fourth floor,
right.
We were in the basement. Mm-hmm. And the only teletype machine that would give us warnings was up on the fifth floor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people would say, bells are ringing up here. You'd go up four flights of stairs to get to the fifth floor out of the basement and then pull these things downstairs and start to put together maps or do mm-hmm. cut-ins. And mm-hmm. and we didn't used to do as many cut-ins as we do today.
Right, right.
It was just a different...
It had to be a very dangerous situation to cut mm-hmm. in. Now, today, I you know, channels now have gotten feedback for cutting into sporting events or cutting into, you know, live programming for thunderstorms. And I think what's unfortunate is sometimes, I take the Hugo tornado, for example, I think that we were so used to warnings and we get so warning overkill about rain coming that we now are so desensitized to these warnings when there's actual dangerous things coming up that we ignore them. And we think it's just another storm.
And that's the problem with the cry wolf syndrome that you get. You know, you need to be able to cut in when it's necessary, but you also need to have a little bit of restraint. And all of the capabilities that we think we have with radar of being able to detect tornadoes ahead of time, if you cut in every time the National Weather Service issued a warning, it really would be overkill.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're trying to protect themselves and, mm-hmm. and their jobs and do what they have to do to warn the public. It's just that you have to be able to look at the situation and say, okay, yes, this is just not a radar warning, but this is something that is not a radar indicated, but mm-hmm. we have some confirmation, and this is the time that we have to go live and stay on until the last dog is hung, so to speak.
The clip we played a while ago had a news intro, and I want to play an actual forecast. This is from 1979.
If we had to describe the day, it was a perfect day, but what were the elements? The temperature, is it 75, 76?
Well, first of all, the biggest thing that made it feel better is that the humidity was lower, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look at our high and low temperature for the day. We had 81,
perfect.
Which was a little bit cooler by 1 degree than yesterday, but the mm-hmm. big difference was just in the humidities. 57 for a low, a sunrise at 5:29 in the morning and sunset at 9:04. Soon we're going to be losing a minute on the sunset time, and that'll be coming up here in another couple of days. Temperature right now is 71 degrees. The winds are out of the southeast at 7. Humidity 55%. The barometer rising 3015. And now across the five-state area, the thunderstorms that we pointed out to you last night on the laser fax picture that were in the Dakotas are continuing to spread slowly to the east with a severe thunderstorm watch covering a chunk of southern South Dakota now. And those showers should be moving across the state tomorrow. It's still 74 degrees out in Alexandria International Falls.
You like those computer graphics?
Most of the highs today were in the 70s and 80s.
A lot of manual work for you guys back in those days.
Well, yeah, and that was if anybody sees these on TV, what we had a cube, and we had four maps that would fit in the four sides of the cube, and you could tilt the plexiglass forward and right on the maps and actually change the maps if you wanted behind it. But, yeah, that was our computer graphics system, an ink marker with a plastic board with painted maps.
Did the presentation of doing forecasting get easier with computer graphics? Did it?
Oh, yes. In fact, I remember the first computer graphics system that we bought was from a fellow over in Wisconsin. It was an Apple IIe with 36K.
Look at that.
36K of RAM, and you had two drive systems to store your maps on and call them up. But what it would do is it would actually ingest data off of the National Weather Service weather wire and plot those temperatures on a map location.
Okay.
So you didn't have to draw all of those temperatures on anymore.
And
you
could
pick the cities that you wanted to display, and you could actually change the color of the lines of the map.
I like this. Slow down, Egghead.
I like the stylus pen. You can actually go on the screen to change the jet stream. That's what I always like seeing. When I was young watching you guys, I wanted to be a meteorologist just so I could play at the computers that you guys were doing.
And, you know, that's the amazing thing about it is, you know, they don't train you at all in computer graphics, and yet you have to be a computer graphics artist almost, you know, to make the maps look presentable and to make them be the right colors and to have the – and now that's pretty much dictated by the graphics department. They want fonts to be certain colors, certain size, certain types, and you don't choose that anymore.
Well, you have a scroll down below. You have four different bugs. You have probably the upcoming scores. You have the temperatures. There's, I think, 25 different messages on the screen. Let's take a break. Let's take some more messages. We'll take a break here. Back with Mike Fairborn from WCCO-TV. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
Marion Cook can take you to the South Pole. We can take our love for winter to the PV Plaza. What happened today is tonight's lead on the 10 p.m. report. And in just a moment, Mike Fairborn will give us a total weather picture standing in the 6 inches of flurries that he forecast last night. I've got to get in.
See you in a minute, David.
More appropriate than those really sunny forecasts I was playing a few minutes ago. That's what it's going to be like. Let's get used to it.
Yes.
Was that let's go on out with the microphone and prove the fact that it snowed last night, and that prediction was accurate.
I don't know what he was talking about. Flurries, 6 inches of flurries, you know.
Is that such a thing? 6 inches of flurries?
No, it isn't. And I don't know. I'd have to go back and look and see if that was really my forecast or if he was making that up just to put me on the spot.
I wish I had the day before tape I'd play it, but I don't. That was, you know, luckily people tape movies badly in the 80s with VCRs, and that's why I have all these newscasts, because no one knows how to hit that stop button on a VCR, and that has created many hours of news on TC Media Now.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave Moore was a wonderful individual to work with. What a giant, you know, in this area. And he always had a joke. He always had something to say to get you off balance.
He was always on too. I mean, there was never a day he came in and was not into it. He was always on.
Yeah,
and everyone I've had Pat Miles on. I've had Bud Kraling on. And everyone has the same Dave stories. And everyone has a good Dave comment they made at some point they didn't know how to respond to, either on air or off air.
Yeah, he asked me one day going up in the elevator, "So tell me something, Fairborn." He says, "What did you do to get to be a meteorologist anyway?" And I looked at him and I said, "Well, when I was little, my dad teased me incessantly." That's all you need is thick skin.
So tell me, do you have in 30 years of doing forecasting and weather from WCCO, is there one storm you remember that you were – does the superstorm, the Howling Blizzard, which of those storms do you think was the one that this was –
Well, there were two, and I can't remember the exact years, but you'll remember the incident. That's when we had that 11-inch rainfall late in the fall. It must have been in August. And we had flooding at Southdale. We had flooding all across the metro area. And I was at WCCO all night. We were giving updates and bringing people updates on the rainfall totals, rainfall amounts, doing news cut-ins of letting them know where highways were closed and what shopping centers were being hit. And I remember driving home in the daylight the next morning out through Golden Valley, heading out toward Plymouth, with water still across the Highway 55 in spots from the heavy rains. And the other incident, of course, was the Halloween blizzard. And, you know, that was the reason I remember that so well, is it started to snow earlier in the day than we had, I think, thought. And so I headed in about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and was heading down to get on the freeway. And some, maybe a half an inch of snow on the highways. Mm-hmm. And some lady made a left-hand turn in front of me when she couldn't move. And her tires were spinning, and I had an accident on the way to work. and then from there, you know, just...
You were the first of many accidents that night, I think.
I think I probably was the first. Yeah,
what's the backup plan for when the meteorologist gets in an accident and can't get there?
Well, I got there. It just delayed me a little
bit. It's a good thing
we exchanged phone numbers, and I said, I'm on my way. And
bye.
Now, did she say... Oh, Mike Fairborn, I'm going to watch you later tonight.
No, she didn't. If she had known that, she probably would have filed a lawsuit or something.
Good point. Good point. Hey, I got some video here of the Superstorm.
Oh, yes.
Maybe some showers and thunderstorms in here after midnight. It looks like the 68 for an overnight low, a little bit above average, and the airport officially recorded 10 inches of rain. That not only brought us to a new monthly rainfall record for July, also gave us a new 24-hour rainfall record, and the rains that fell yesterday were a new daily record for July, what was that, the 23rd. Boy, you lose track of time when you're up all night with the system anyway.
And there you go. 10 inches of rain.
Yeah. And so, you know, a couple of those things are memorable, and always the tornadoes. You know, we had the tornadoes that came through the Lake Harriet area mm-hmm. and across into Lake Street area of Minneapolis. That was, I don't think there were any deaths or casualties, but I mean, it was terrifying, you know, mm-hmm. to have tornadoes right in downtown Minneapolis. And so the Wilmer tornado outbreak, that was horrible.
And what made you decide to give it all up after in 2010, 2011, you decided to, 33 years is?
Yeah, 33 years was long enough. I mean, I'm getting old, believe it or not, and I had other things, you know, mm-hmm. that I need to do with the rest of my life.
You went on an amazing trip for 2 years.
Well, we had always planned on serving a mission for our church, and when I retired in July, we had applied for a mission. We didn't know actually where they would send us or mm-hmm. what our assignment would be, but we got the assignment to go to Quetzaltenango, Guatemala, and we were there for almost 2 years. It was mm-hmm. for 21 and a half months, and we didn't come home during that time, but we had internet and Skype and telephones and Vonage, and so we were able to keep track with what's going on with our family.
And you hadn't been on the country for that period of time. Ever? I mean, have you ever taken that long of a trip outside of...
Not that long.
TV, you don't get much vacation time.
No, but, you know, as you build seniority, I mean, I hate to even tell people how much vacation time we had. with the after union, mm-hmm. we got all of our holidays, 10 days, mm-hmm. but we got to lump those.
Okay.
And so we could take those all off at one time as opposed to taking them when the holiday occurred. So that was convenient.
So you worked many Thanksgiving and Christmases, I'm sure, in your life, right?
Sure did. Yeah. A lot of Thanksgivings and Christmases.
But tell us about the trip. I mean, that had to have been just fulfilling. I mean, you'd been to spend the after...
Well, yeah, you go down there. I think the thing that's terrifying about us is that about it was that we speak no Spanish.
Okay.
And
you know?
I can see that being a problem.
And you know, you think about going to Mexico. I mean, a lot of people in Mexico speak English, but very few people speak English in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
And to get off of an airplane and look around and try to figure out where the exit signs are and where the customs is, and to get transportation to travel from Guatemala City up to Quetzaltenango. Thankfully, someone picked us up.
And did you, I guess today, Mike Fairborn, talking about his trip to Guatemala, did you have a book? Did you have a device, anything that kind of got you through day to day? You know, I need some water. I need to...
No. we had people that could translate for us, mm-hmm. but they weren't always available to us. So we just went there and went to the grocery store, and they told us the only thing you have to say when you're checking out is "no neat." And what that means is they issue people government ID numbers if you want to have your purchases tax-free or something. I don't know.
Okay.
And so that's the question that they always ask you. And you say, "no neat," and they ring it up, and you give them your card and pay for your groceries. The hard part is trying to figure out what groceries you can purchase and what food you
can
eat, because you don't get the same things in Guatemala that you can get here. The only thing that kept us alive was my wife's ability to bake and have all of the baking goods imported from Minneapolis to Guatemala via our daughter.
Did you have to send to your kids some notes? "Hey, we need this, this, and this, and could you send them as soon as possible?"
Well, we'd make phone calls, and
Okay.
we always had a box in progress. So we would have every time we would add an ingredient that we needed, she would throw something else in the box until the box filled up to 20 pounds that you can send for your $75 or whatever it is, and we'd get our goods 3 weeks later.
Well, at least it got there, right?
That's right.
You've been back a few months now, and you're going to experience winter again, like the rest of us have to endure. Any other plans to another trip? I mean, did the trip inspire you to do more, or do you think you're going to be around for a while?
I don't think we will do another trip like that, mm-hmm. but I think we will continue to do some travels. And we look forward to being able to do that at our leisure. In fact, we made some good friends with some people down in Guatemala, and they're planning – they're back in the States now. They're planning on going back down this next spring and have already emailed us and want to know if we want to go down to Guatemala with them. I don't know. I keep looking at my wife and see if she really wants to do that again. You know, being down there and realizing that you're there and there's nothing you can do about it, we finally found a taxi driver that could speak enough English that we could tell him where we wanted to go, and he could get us back to where we needed to be. And those were just blessings to us, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden you didn't feel like you were alone. But I got robbed at gunpoint. It's a dangerous country. The highways are dangerous. You can be driving along and the hillside will have slid off across the road, and the road will have been carried down another 1,000 feet into the valley floor, and you're always kind of on the watch for things like that. And there's no DOT.
No.
The only way you know that there's a problem up ahead is they tear off tree branches, start scattering tree branches in the road, and you don't know what that means. You don't know whether the winds blew the branches down or if they're trying to tell you that the road's out up ahead.
You know, we have our this rhetoric in this country sometimes about too much government, and
yes.
I've been to Nairobi before, and I've been to a couple different places around the world that there's very little government, and there's a balance somewhere. I think we can find somewhere, because I remember being driving in Nairobi without any, not myself, but a taxi driver, which is basically a Chevy Impala with no signs or anything on it,
mm-hmm.
and no speed limits and no traffic control, and you're on these roads and you're looking at the speedometer and like, "Oh, we're going pretty fast here, and one wrong turn and this is going to be the my story ends here." It's frightening.
And, you know, between Quetzaltenango, which is the second largest city in Guatemala, and Guatemala City, it's 135 kilometers. It's a 4.5-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gives you an idea, you know, of the condition of the roads and the highway, the traffic that you run into, you
mm-hmm.
know. It's just crazy.
Well, back to weather. When you left in 2011, what do you think was the biggest change in the way that you did your forecast, the way you did your job, than when you started? We looked at some clips where you're doing very manual work with markers and boards, and ended an era with very heavily computer graphics and very much promoting the equipment, the satellites, and broadcasting or predicting tornadoes that are going to come down your block.
Well, obviously, it was the technology, and the technology improved dramatically from the early 70s to early 90s, really, and beyond that is almost exponential. So we've seen where we used to tear off satellite pictures from a laser fax machine, mm-hmm. and put them up on a HOD, which is an mm-hmm. easel that the camera would shoot, to mm-hmm. animated satellite pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether people find that interesting or not, but it helps portray the direction that the weather is moving. Mm-hmm. Same thing with radar. Our ability to see where it's raining, pretty phenomenal if you stop and think about it. Mm-hmm. And that was an outcome of the radar during the Second World War that they developed to detect planes, and the rain kept mm-hmm. blocking the ability to see the airplanes until we realized, hey, you know, this is a tool that we can use in meteorology. Mm-hmm. And then to portray the weather in a way that people can understand and not be too technical. I think the computer graphics help us do that a mm-hmm. lot. I think it's interesting that you can have a computer model that will actually show what the precip is going to build to over the next 24 hours, for mm-hmm. example, and to be able to show that on a television screen, something that we wouldn't have been able to do 20 years ago. That we're certainly able to do today.
And will you continue going to state fairs now that you don't have to go anymore and sit there for 4 hours?
What? We did state fairs for so many years that all of my kids that have moved away from the Twin Cities uh-huh. come back to visit during the state fair. They love the state fair, so yes, we'll continue to go to the state fair.
That's I was in a line one time, and it was a different meteorologist, different station, and he was signing autographs. I remember everyone that was coming up to him was complaining about the weather or asking him about, hey, what's the weather going to be on Saturday? Or, hey, that fork. And the person, I won't name names of what it was, but he was just smiling and just signed the autograph.
When people say those things, you know, you're always wrong. You know, they're not saying you're always wrong. What they're saying is, hey, I recognize you, you know, and it's fun to tease you and to talk with you a little bit. So
you're always wrong, but I want to watch you every single day.
That's and it doesn't matter why they watch as long as they watch. If you were wrong every day or if you would do something, just like Barry Zavan, the weatherman, you know, if you act crazy enough, people will tune in. Tune in to watch. And I love Barry. Barry was the TV weatherman at KID-TV in Idaho Falls, Idaho, when I was a young boy growing up.
Oh, wow,
there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, can you believe that?
And he's been on the show before, too.
Did he still have the same shtick back then?
He did. And I think he took it with him to Detroit when he went to Detroit, didn't he? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he brought it with here, too. And I think he still has it, actually.
Yes.
But everyone, what was your shtick? Now, if someone to say, what's Mike Fairbairn's shtick? What is it?
I think my shtick was that I just did kind of a straight weather forecast.
That's unheard of.
Well, see, that's what makes it comedic, because no one else did a straight forecast. So that was your shtick for doing something straightforward. Yeah. Now, we in Minnesota, we take weather pretty seriously here. We talk about it nonstop. And, you know, if you look at my videos on tcmedianow.com, a lot of them are weather-driven. So I think that in this city, we've actually been pretty lucky. Even Paul Douglas or people that have shtick, they come with very strong backgrounds in weather and come with very, you know, of credibility to them. I think even bigger markets like LA that probably have kind of one constant climate, which is between 65 and 85, they can have
morning clouds clearing in the afternoon. Yeah,
right. They can have comics and zookeepers and do the weather, and no one notices because they're watching car chases anyway. But
and people actually pay to get television jobs in Hawaii. So they
mm-hmm. right, exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be between 75 and 82 today.
Well, is that next?
That's
Hawaii?
The next week.
Is that the next spot for you?
No.
Okay, because you used to do those vacations where, you know, go with Mike Fairbairn for a cruise for a week. Wasn't mm-hmm. that one of the MLT vacations you did?
Well, it was with holiday vacations.
Holiday vacations, right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we're talking with them again, so we'll see where that leads us over the next few years.
I got a few of those commercials, too, online. We can look at those. Yeah. Real quick story, Tom, or we got to go?
Oh, we got about a minute and 5 seconds.
Oh, there's a good Dave Moore story. This is hearsay, but Dave Moore went on some Middle Eastern vacation, and he was very spiritual, and then someone walks up with a holiday vacation bag. Hey, Dave! And they're yelling at him, and it just ruined the whole moment for me.
Well, I've been on a ship in the middle of Lake Lucerne, and people sitting across from me on the bench say, you're Mike Fairbairn. Oh, how?
Didn't you used to be Mike Fairbairn, right?
Yeah, I used to be Mike Fairbairn.
Mike, thank you for being a guest today. Again, tcmedianow.com. You can see Mike doing forecasts still. And let's have you on again. Let's talk about some more stories, more weather, more tornadoes.
Don't tell them about my four-day or my four-week beard, okay?
Oh, I like
it's
the look.
It's a good thing it's radio, not TV.
I like the look. This is Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next Saturday here on KLBB Club 1220.